On today's Hot Zone, just when you thought the border crisis couldn't get any worse, and we'll talk about what's going on in Haiti and why people are leaving there in droves, and we'll talk to somebody in San Francisco and find out why UC Berkeley is a hot zone like no other. All on this episode of The Hot Zone.
This is The Hot Zone. Engaging with the news in a whole new way, international war correspondent Chuck Holton brings insight into areas of crisis and lets you help those affected.
Hey folks, Chuck Holton. Thanks for being with us today. It is another beautiful day here in West Virginia, and I am hurrying to get this out before it gets too dark because I've been kind of lollygagging today, not really getting my work done. I'm enjoying life too much out here. First, I want to just touch on what's going on the U.S. southern border. We are so far beyond crisis proportions now in this immigrant wave, this tidal wave of people coming across our southern border. They're saying now that in the month of April, 84,000 family units came across the U.S. southern border. We're on pace to hit 1 million people this year coming illegally into the United States. And what we're seeing along the southern border is that there just isn't anywhere to put these people. They're putting them under bridges. They're putting them in strip malls. They're putting them in hotels and, just overwhelming hospitals. And they just don't have the resources to deal with this many people. But one of the reasons that so many people are coming right now is because the migrants understand what's going on in American politics. They understand that Donald Trump wants to secure the border by building a wall. And they understand that if he's ever able to build a wall, that the party's over. It's going to be much, much more difficult to get in. But they also know that the Democrats are steadfastly denying Donald Trump everything he wants in the way of stopping this migration crisis. And they're doing that. You have to ask why. Why would they do something like that? Why would they want so many undocumented people coming across our borders? Well, it just makes sense that they're coming across, or they're allowing these people to come across. They want them to come in because they want to get more votes. And they know that people from Latin America, by and large, are going to vote Democrat, and they're going to vote on the left side of the spectrum. These people, many of them are coming from countries that are more socialist leaning. And so they believe that it's a government's job to provide for you, to give you everything you need from cradle to grave. As I was in Panama last week and I was talking to these migrants walking through the Darien jungle, many of them from Africa, that what they were doing was they were complaining about the conditions in a camp, in a place they came to illegally, that they had no business being there, they had no right to be there, and they were saying, they don't even give us pillows. They don't even give us hot water. The food is terrible here. They were complaining about the conditions in the camp. Now, were the conditions great? No. But do you have anything to complain about if you came in illegally, if you have no right to be there? No, you're just lucky they don't shoot you. But this is the kind of people that are coming to the United States now. They're coming with an expectation of what they will get from the U.S. government, with an understanding of the way the game is played. They know how to game the system. And look, I'm not saying that many of these people don't have legitimate asylum claims. Many of them do. I'm not saying that they don't, that there's no reason that they shouldn't be able to come to the United States or any other country. I think people, by and large, should be able to move if they want to move. They should be able to go where they want to go. I myself moved to another country because the conditions were better there. But in reality, the fact that these people are coming and they're not following the legal procedure, they're coming in specifically to the United States because they know they can get lots of benefits from the government. They can get lots of free stuff. It's like winning the lottery. And now we find that many of these migrants are paying for their journey with money that's been sent to them by other illegal immigrants who are already in the United States. Take a look at this.
Court of Appeals granting the Trump administration a temporary win on immigration, granting their request to send asylum seekers back to Mexico as they wait out court proceedings.
So is this significant? This is the White House reveals details of its new immigration plan, at least some principles, which include securing the border and moving towards a merit-based system. Could all this be the answer to handling the immigration crisis, short-term, long-term? Our next guest is by President Bush, Obama, and Trump on immigration issues.
His name is the Reverend Samuel Rodriguez. You know him. He's been on the show before. He's the president of the National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference, which is the largest Hispanic Christian organization. Congratulations. You have a new book coming out. We're going to get to that. But first, we wanted you to comment on this. Can you believe this? Ninth Circuit. You live in Sacramento.
It's the Ninth Circuit. So, Dorothy, we're not in Kansas anymore. I'm a preacher committed to, you know, the faith in Christ and miracles, right? It's a miracle, man. The Ninth Circuit. This puts the onus on Mexico. And if you think for a second that Mexico's going to tolerate tens of thousands of individuals in its northern border in perpetuity, you're completely mistaken. You're going to see Mexico crack down and address some of the caravans that are coming up to our southern border.
He's also telling his asylum officers to get tougher with applicants. He's also letting deputies detain immigrants on behalf of ICE, subverting sanctuary laws. So he's trying to get something done today.
But we should. It's morally reprehensible. This is egregious. I mean, so help us God. It's from a political standpoint, from a national standpoint, protecting our citizenry, stopping illegal immigration. But from a humanitarian standpoint, for you to be somehow committed to open borders and somehow applauding in a de facto way or de jure way, and undocumented individuals coming into this country, you're supporting, and this is going to be a little bit on the coarse side, you're supporting implicitly sex trafficking, human trafficking, for crying out loud. It's morally reprehensible. Bush tried, Obama tried for a short season. I believe this president may surprise the world and pass and somehow succeed in passing immigration reform, believe it or not.
So this is an absolutely crushing issue. And if we don't get, I mean, if you think about it, what could we possibly do to stop this? Well, the only real thing that we can do to put a stop to it is to build a barrier, build a solid, large, difficult to cross barrier all along our U.S. southern border. There's far too many places right now that don't have any kind of barrier, as I saw when I was down there just recently. So if there's any other way to stop it, it would have to be something to address the push factor, the things that, well, that we could address more of the pull factor by telling people if you come to the United States illegally, you get zero from the government. You are not eligible for anything. Your kids cannot go to school. You cannot use a hospital for free because we have many, many people coming across pregnant that are hoping to have their babies in the United States because they know they can get free medical care. And guess who pays for that? You and I. So we'd have to address the pull factors. We'd have to address the push factors. And we have to build the stupid wall. The reason the Democrats don't want the wall built is because they know that if we build a wall, it will stand the test of time. The next Democratic president is not going to be able to pull that wall down. He's not going to go ahead and bulldoze that whole thing and tear it down. If we get the wall built, the wall will stay and it will continue to stop drug trafficking, human trafficking, illegal migration for decades and indeed probably centuries to come. So it is very, very important to get that wall built. Now, I want to go on and talk a little bit about Haiti. I had Drew Paisler on the show a while back. He was there in that ambush where the group of missionaries were ambushed and Doug Berbella was shot in the neck and miraculously survived. Well, I was able to go and meet with the entire group who was there and interview them, and I got to interview Doug Berbella. Now, that's all coming up on a new CBN episode, a CBN 700 Club episode shortly. I'm going to make a package about it. I'm in the middle of doing that. But because you guys listen to The Hot Zone, you get to see a sneak preview of some of what's going to be on that package on the 700 Club. Check this out.
And the men were running after us. I could see out the front window there was two guys with guns, and they lifted up the guns, pointed them right at us, which I'd never had happen before in my life, and they started shooting.
I really wasn't paying much attention to anything going along this side of the road. We were talking inside of the truck, and all of a sudden there's a roadblock. And that still didn't bother me too much because we've seen those a lot of times. And they would want money, we would give them money, and we would continue. But this was different because the truck was just totally swarmed with men with guns and weapons.
You know, the same roads we went on last time, but this time when we came to this one small village, we came around a corner and all of a sudden, here the road's blocked off, there's burning tires, there's debris, there's a, you know, this mass crowd of 100, 120 people there, well armed with guns. And as we started approaching, they started firing these guns up in the air. And I'll be perfectly truthful, at that moment, I thought, we're going to die.
We thought that they were going to execute everybody. So we started reversing, and Doug's yelling, go, go, go. And as I'm going, that's when we started hearing the guns fire that were being pointed at us. We could hear the bullets hitting the front of the vehicle.
The chaos ensued. It was people that were beating on the windows trying to get in and not being able to communicate. Our hope was in, you know, Pastor Etienne, the Haitian pastor that was with us, to try to communicate to these people.
There's one man standing there with his gun, and he has two white lines down his cheek and to his chin. And it reminded me of voodoo.
And I could see that there was a motorcycle next to us, and they had a machine gun, and it was, the window blew out behind my head. And a couple seconds after that, I heard Doug yell, I'm dying, I've been hit.
The next thing I know, I'm looking down on my body, and I see my arms shaking like this, just quivering. And I said, wow, this isn't good. I've been shot, and since I'm above my body, I take it that I'm dead. So, but I gotta warn my friends that I've been shot, because they're still trying to get away. So I started screaming, I'm dead, look back, I'm dead. And they couldn't hear me, so I figured it out. I said, okay, I'm in a spiritual realm now, I'm in a different dimension altogether. So I said, the only one that's going to listen to me now is God. So I stopped. I said, I better start praying. So I said, you know, Father God, I have a wife and a son that need me, and I love them dearly. And I said, I don't like that this is my time to leave right now. I said, I got a lot of miles left on my sneakers. I said, I got a lot of things to accomplish for your kingdom. I said, I gotta keep taking Jesus. I said, you know, I've been doing this for decades, and I'll keep on doing it. I will keep telling the world about Jesus. And as soon as I finished saying that, I settled right back in my body and looked at my arms. Wow, I'm back. So then I immediately looked out the window to my left, and there's three guys aiming their guns at me.
And Doug had so much blood on him, we thought that he had been lung shot through the vitals, but we couldn't do anything because he physically couldn't move. I mean, you could not move in the vehicle. And, you know, during the course of the trip back, you know, Doug was fading in and out, and at one point in time he said, look, I'm not going to make it. Would somebody please record my last words?
Go ahead.
Honey, I just want you to know I love you, and I love you, Michael. Michael, I want you to be a pilot. Don't ever give up that dream. Live for the Lord. Honey, I love you. I love you both dearly.
I didn't say much, but I just felt I had to say something and encourage my son, especially to live for the Lord. That was what I wanted to tell him. Most important, live for the Lord.
So now, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to go and talk a little bit about a hot zone that you might not have considered right here in the United States, and that is San Francisco, California. I went out there last August, maybe, something like that, and just was absolutely blown away by the just open depravity that you see all around you when you go to San Francisco. But I talked to a young man who's a Republican in California. Now, they haven't outlawed being Republican yet, but that may be coming very shortly, and it's obviously not easy being a conservative in a place like San Francisco.
So I wanted to know what it's like to be a conservative in the most liberal city in America, here in San Francisco. So I figured probably the best place to do that would be to talk to some Republicans. So I looked up the office of the Republican Party here, and this is the address that's listed. It's the United States Post Office. They have a P.O. box, that's it. They didn't answer their phone either. I guess you can't really blame them. But hopefully they'll call me back and I can meet up with a few of them and ask them some questions about what it's like living here.
I left a voicemail and they got back to me right away. As it turns out, San Francisco Republicans were really excited to meet another conservative. They all joined me at a local restaurant for dinner.
I am Nicole Garay. I'm the vice chair of the County Republican Party. I am a student at the University of San Francisco, and I have my own small business, which is a dog walking company. In my work as a dog walker with my dog walking company, I walk on the streets of San Francisco every day and see the negative effects, which has led me to become such a avid volunteer in the San Francisco Republican Party, which I love doing, and that it's seriously time for change, and that electing another Democrat is not going to fix the problem because they all share the same beliefs. There was actually a point in time where I was working at a preschool, and the preschool has a park outside, but you're in the middle of the city. So of course, naturally, every morning you have to go outside and you have to check for weed, you have to check for heroin needles.
There is sort of this term called closet conservative. And here in the Bay Area, where the LGBTQ community is so prevalent, it's actually more difficult, in my opinion, to come out as conservative than it is to come out as LGBTQ. Being in the Bay Area, it's very difficult. Particularly, I go to a historically all-women's college. And so you have definitely a large LGBTQ presence, an incredibly liberal presence. And it's pretty much committing social as well as academic suicide to state that you're a conservative in any capacity.
For us, with the last couple mayors, we haven't had a voice in City Hall. We tried, say, hey, talk to us, bring us in, and no way. And they legislate basically based on their extreme left-wing ideology and common sense or best practices, for the most part, are not part of the equation.
I feel it's a travesty that our Second Amendment rights are being infringed upon, that San Francisco is working hard and the state is working hard to take away our freedoms. I mean, it's almost like a ruling class or an elitist class where the hypocrisy is just too much to bear at this point for me. I've been in the private sector for a couple decades, and now I want to move forward to go against this travesty. And I believe it's fine for them, of course, to defend themselves, but it's wrong to be hypocritical and go against the common person being able to have their Second Amendment rights and freedoms and defend themselves and their families.
Serving overseas, you know, and going through what everyone goes through in service, and having people look down upon you or kind of you're kind of considered an outcast, and you know, sometimes it's hard enough adjusting from service to civilian life anyways, and you're amongst these people who pride themselves of being progressive and open, but they're only progressive and open if your ideology or how you act or your history aligns with theirs or their narrative. I had a former supervisor go on these crazy Facebook diatribes on my Facebook page, spouting anti-gun, anti-veteran stuff, and she said something to the effect of, I don't understand why, or actually it started with, it's alarming being in the same room as colleagues who've served overseas, and you think to yourself, well, you know, just a couple years ago, he was out in Iraq and killing people, and now he's in front of a computer. It's like...
So that's all I've got for you today, folks. Thanks for watching The Hot Zone. I look forward to seeing you again tomorrow. Please like and share the podcast, and go to OpsLens TV to watch the podcast, because we got to thank those guys for giving us the exposure. And there's a lot of great shows on OpsLens that you can watch as well. So check that out. Thanks again. I'm Chuck Holton, and you've been watching The Hot Zone.
The Hot Zone is produced by Amy Holton and Livefire Media. Copyright 2019.